Yeah, you can call me Verona as well.
Verona. Okay. Verona. I like saying you're a doctor. Or Dr. V. Okay. Dr. V, are you ready to get in bed with me?
I think I'm already in bed with you.
But are you ready to be in bed with me?
Yes, I am.
I'm glad. Everyone, I have Dr. Verona. They are a sexual health expert, also a writer. Right now, Allure's Magazine sex columnist.
Yeah.
And pretty badass. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh my God, thank you for having me. This is so wonderful.
Okay, so let's start with an easy question.
Okay.
Favorite thing you've written, one silly and one more serious?
I don't think that I can say any of the things I've written are like silly and not serious, because I usually like end on kind of like a serious note. But there was this one article that I wrote for Inverse, and the editors had really wanted it to be like funny and a little like meme-y. And so it was kind of looking into some of the weird challenges that happen on TikTok. And one of them was this kind of like a rumor that was going around that testicles have taste buds. And so all of these like men were, all of these wives were testing it out on their husbands. And so these men, grown men, would dip their testicles bare in
some
like
sort of liquid.
In soy sauce. Someone actually put it in like caramel sauce, which like the texture is just,
it's so sticky.
Literally. And then it was so interesting because at the end of those videos, they'd be like, oh, I can taste it. And so
Were they supposed to guess what they were dipping it in?
Exactly.
And yeah. Some actually guessed it. Well, it might be staged. We don't know.
But also like most of taste comes from smell, right? So like also, you can smell soy sauce. Like
yeah,
it has pretty a strong smell.
That's true.
As does caramel. And so I wrote an article about that, and I thought it was really interesting because it was so silly, because it's so obvious that there are no taste buds down there, like there are on your tongue. But there
are just hairs, people.
I know.
Those are hair follicles.
It's skin, right? Like it's not even the testicle. It's right. Like the scrotum,
right?
The skin. But we ended up, I ended up finding research that showed that the testes itself, so like internally, do have taste receptors, which are like linked to like fertility. So that was like a silly one, because I ended up like doing a lot of research on TikTok and seeing all of these videos of grown men in their cars dipping their testicles.
Okay, but
in
this
soy
is
sauce.
Actually interesting. Like, where did people get that from, you know?
I think someone just saw a study and then just like went with it. And you know how TikTok is. They're just did you know that testicles have taste buds?
Try this.
Exactly.
And the challenge starts and then everyone wants to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was a pretty silly, silly one.
Okay. And the serious one?
Oh, okay. Since we're going into that territory, I was working at Planned Parenthood last year when Roe v. Wade was overturned. And on the 1 year anniversary, I wrote an article, like an op-ed for Vogue India, where, you know, a lot of like marginalized communities are really like worried about what it's going to look like. Things are not looking good. Like in Alabama, they've just banned IVF treatments because they think embryos are babies. Life, and this is the same state that has the death penalty and like comes up with new ways to kill people in jail. Like, you are never pro-life.
Yeah.
Ever. Like, they are not pro-life, right? Like, and so it's so, I think that was like a really like heartfelt and serious article, because, you know, a lot of Asians already don't have access to abortion or like don't seek abortion. And if they are living in states like Alabama or otherwise, then it's just only going to get worse. So that was one of the most serious articles I've written so far.
That's really cool. Was it? Well, I feel like all your articles are well researched, but was this particularly well researched?
Actually, no. So yes and no. More no. So like there was less reporting involved.
Okay.
So like with the Allure articles and everything else, like I do a lot of reporting. So making sure that the sources are accurate, talking to a lot of people. But for the Vogue India, it was more so based on my fear as someone, you know, who does access reproductive health services, and like what that's going to look for me and my children and my friends and a lot of people I know who've had abortions. And, you know, so like, what does it mean for body autonomy? So I think that was definitely more personal.
It's more of an essay.
Yes. Yeah.
That's very interesting that you're a journalist and that's like one of your favorites.
I know. I really do enjoy writing. I think it's just the nerd in me. I really like writing and researching a good topic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how did you become a Lure 6 columnist? Like, what got you here? How are you here? How are you here in bed with me?
I will say, like, pitch yourself. Like, I literally say this to every single person. Like, I spent a lot of time, like, underestimating my abilities and saying, like, no, that's not going to ever happen for me. I wrote only one article for Allure before. And then I...
Before you became their, like...
That's it. Yeah. I just wrote one article, like, maybe a year and a half ago. And then I was like, you know what? I'm feeling really delulu right now. I'm going
to... Feed your delulu.
I know. Literally, feed your delusions. They work. I can't even tell you. Alexa, I, like, literally wrote this entire email. And I was, like, pitching myself. And I was like, this is why you need me. And it worked out for the best.
It fucking works. So, yeah.
It works. Yeah. I mean,
we're in the woo-woo.
Literally, I'm in the second year of the column. So it's interesting because I did medicine as my primary career. And that was something that I...
Was that because your parents wanted you to?
I mean, a big part of it was that they wanted me to be... So I'm interested in science. Mm-hmm. I've always been a STEM girly. I think I was definitely more interested in community medicine and public health, which is what I did. So I went to Hopkins to do that. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, I had a friend who was a journalist. And so seeing him, and it's really cool. I mean, you literally travel the world and you report on amazing stories and you're like interviewing people and you're writing about, I don't know, like the Ebola virus. So you're talking about like how maternal mortality rates are like shit in other countries. So, that was something that I had gotten into. So I like bought a lot of books and I was like, how can I be a writer? How can I be a health writer? And so it was just a lot of like self-learning, a lot of interest in public health. And now I don't practice medicine. Like I left my practice in India. Like my last job was in 2015, like delivering children. And I was like, goodbye. I cannot do this for a living. I'm so done with sitting in a clinic right now, waking up at 4 a.m. to deliver someone else's child. That's for someone else. It's not for me. And so I'm really glad that I pivoted and now I work in like health media and communications.
Yeah. Well, now you like writing about sex parties.
I know, literally.
Yeah. So actually, because I saw this one article about sex parties and you're mostly interviewing people, but have you actually gone? Like, do you go also to like... For research purposes, you know?
that's so funny you say that because like early last year, I had applied. Or you have to get vetted, right? Because a lot of these places are like...
Yeah, most of them. You should.
You should get vetted. So Venus Cuff's a friend of mine. I want to plug her name. She hosts a lot of these play parties. Mm-hmm. And so she was hosting a really cool one.
Here?
In Brooklyn. Uh-huh. So she's New York based. She has these kinds of parties all the time. And... So I had convinced two of my friends to go. So they were like a queer couple. Mm-hmm. And so I meet them at 11 o'clock and I'm like, I bail.
PM? Literally,
yeah. Meet them at 11 p.m. No. And it starts at like 12 and I was already tired.
I don't go to those. Those are too late for me. I go to like the daytime ones. I cannot. It's too late.
And you also have more energy during the day.
Yeah. And then the next day, you're not like fucking tired and sleep deprived, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah.
Midnight? No. This. No.
Literally.
So wait, so they bailed on you?
No, I bailed on them.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Wait, so you didn't go?
So I think it was more of like, I think I was really overthinking this. And I think the next time I am going to go, it's just that I'm in a monogamous relationship and it's incredibly secure. Like we don't have like, you know, we masturbate, we watch porn, we like engage in our own thing. So it isn't like a kind of toxic monogamy or anything like that. And so there was no problem with me going to a sex party. I think it was just, I was worried about the voyeurism part of it, right? Yeah. Because I think that's something that a lot of people can go and watch but not engage.
But you can totally just, I love watching. I just like watch people sometimes. It's
maybe
great.
That's what I should do the next time. Because I was like, if I'm not participating and I'm just there, then is that creepy?
No, it's fine. Especially like, it's kind of, I mean, it makes sense. There's backstory to this, but like female presenting people.
Yeah.
People don't complain about us. They complain mostly if there's like a man just watching, you know, like staring at you and
with
you're
getting
eyes. Uncomfortable. Yeah, like the eyes. But like it is acceptable. Like as long as you're not like in there, you know, you can totally. I love watching.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And also like the community. Sometimes I'm like a slut, but sometimes I don't need. I do play with people every time, but like, yeah, I don't have to. Sometimes I just want to be there and talk to people, and it's amazing.
That's what they said. So the next morning I felt so guilty. And so I called them and I was like, what was it? Was it just like a bunch of beds and people were having sex everywhere? And they said no. So I think this is what most play parties look like, since that was my first, was that there was like a back section with beds. But you're right about the community aspect, because they said that a lot, it was so wholesome because people were coming up to them, and it's just a safe community where people can express their kinks.
Yeah. And some people, it's like the only place they can fully be themselves. So it's like,
yes,
they go to every single party, even if they don't do anything with anyone, they want to see their friends, like their chosen family, you know? So,
aww, I love that. Yeah. And it's super queer friendly and it's super safe. And they have like, especially Venus, I feel I had felt so drawn to that because I, even like in her messaging and everything, was more like, this is what consent looks like. We're going to have like an informed consent talk like at 11 p.m. where like everyone can like everyone.
Okay, yeah. Yes, but too late.
11 p.m.
Venus
is very late.
Petitioned to start doing daytime parties.
I think she does. I think she does. Okay. Like if you check out her newsletter. But yeah, the one I went to was too late.
Yeah. No.
It was very late. 11 p.m. Now I think about it, I'm like, what was I doing?
I'm asleep by 10. That's never happening. Okay, so you're here and you write about all sorts of topics.
Mm-hmm.
Would your 15-year-old self be like, V, what the fuck are you doing with your life? Or would she be proud? Would, you know?
I think she would be really proud. Also because I grew up in such a sex-negative culture. As you can tell from my accent, I'm not from the United States of America. I did not grow up in this system. Not that this is incredibly sex-positive either. But in India, it's very sex negative. Like, you are compulsory heteronormativity. Like, you know, it's like monogamy is pushed on everybody. And so...
Well, arranged marriages are still a very...
My parents had an arranged marriage.
Right. So, like, it's not even our gen... Well, I don't know how old you are, but, like, I'm still 33. People my age. Okay. Yeah. Same generation.
Yeah.
People our age are still getting arranged marriages. Like, it's still a thing in
exactly.
India.
Exactly. So. 100%. Yeah. I mean, my brother was talking to someone... through an arranged marriage. And like, it is very much like a lot of people are meeting their spouses. I mean, that's such a legit way. It's like almost like kind of like online dating, except your parents are.
And so you have a matchmaker.
Exactly.
Right.
You have a matchmaker, right? And so there was a lot. I don't know if you ever experienced this, but when I was 15, I was such at war with my body and I was horny all the time. But I felt so bad that I was horny.
No, I was horny, but I did act on it. I did have very bad body image, though.
Like, I feel like that's just like such a... I don't know why, especially as teenage girls, you're literally just like, what is going on with my body?
Well, it's pushed on you. It's like you have to hate your body. And if you like your body, you're weird. Because
I know.
How come you're not insecure? It's terrible.
And when your breasts are kind of like coming in, you're just like... Oh my God, why? And the buds, I'm so sorry, but when I was in
the buds,
they're literally, so they're called buds, right? So when your nipples, so usually when you're a child, your chest is flat.
Like, yes.
And then the hormones come in and then you have breast development.
Yes.
And then your nipples sort of like bulge out of your skin and they're called buds.
Okay, I know what you mean.
Right?
I don't think I ever had that though.
But you're too small to wear a bra. And so like, it's so awkward when you wear a t-shirt. And so all I did was wear the baggiest t-shirts and the shirts.
But it like hurt. I remember it hurting when my boobs were growing.
Right?
It was like uncomfortable.
And like my ass grew and all of this estrogen was like, bam.
Wait, so you didn't like it? Because I feel like in my culture, when you go through... puberty, unless you're the first one, and then it's like you're the first one. If you're like within everyone, it's like, finally I'm getting breasts, you know, my tits are growing, so it's like celebrated. It's not like, oh my God, no.
I mean, I was pretty like fortunate that way, that I never had like dysphoria, you know. Like, I was definitely like very accepting of my body. I was definitely like identified as cis and being like, okay, this is something that I'm comfortable with. You mentioned that, you know, you acted on a lot of it. I never did. I was so afraid that people were going to know that I wasn't a virgin, or that I would automatically be a bad person.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't having sex, but I was like...
But I wanted to do that too. And then I slowly started at 16 and I was like, I'm just going to have...
16 is fine.
16, I think, is like... And no penetrative sex by then. I started... pretty late. Like, I think the first time I had sex was like 21, which I think is really helpful in maturing. But anyway, coming back to the question, I really feel like when I think about my 15-year-old self, like, she was definitely really confused mm-hmm. and really did not even think that I would be talking about sex or be comfortable or,
so you know, openly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, being bisexual and kind of like really interested in like, I think the health equity part she would have known because I knew I wanted to be in STEM. Mm-hmm. So there's some kind of surprises, but for the most part, it kind of seems on brand. Aww. Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about your parents, because you did this one reel that I loved in your Instagram about things they've actually said to you about your marriage. And I'm like, no way. Like, it's how come so you haven't given him children as if you owed him? Don't let him know that you make more money than him. How come you leave the house without him? Like, what is going on?
So, all of this happened last year.
No!
You think it happened like a couple of years ago? No, we've been married for 5 years. It happened last year.
I know. I can't.
It's so...
How do you handle those questions? Like, what do you reply?
I just... You know, it's so... I should... validate my parents, and I, you know, it's funny because I'm always just like, guys, just chill, just relax. It's real, but I feel, you know, I really do. And I had an honest conversation with my parents the other day when I went to India in January, and I said, like, I hope that you are able to let us go because I'm 33 and my brother's 31. You guys don't have to worry about us and always be in that parental mode. Mm-hmm. And I started to think of my parents as like not my parents, but as like people. Mm-hmm. Right? And so like they have sexual desires. They have romantic desires. And the sad part is that they were never given that space to experience it. Mm-hmm. And so to them, it's like such a normal thing for my mom to just... Because my mom did that throughout her relationship with my dad, where as soon as they got married, within a year, they had me, which was like very common. Like she was pulled out of college to get married. Mm-hmm. And she never felt like she had an identity outside of my dad. She had to travel with him. It was like whatever happened with the patriarch of the family was what happened to everybody else. And so I think it's interesting for her to look at me and be like, because last year I went to Spain. Mm-hmm. After I left my job at Planned Parenthood, I was like, I'm just going to go to Spain. My sister's going. Like, I didn't even, it's not even like I went alone. I went there to see my sister mm-hmm. and like I joined her trip with her friends. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, next time I have to talk to you. Next time you're not traveling alone without William. What is this? What is wrong with you guys? Why are you doing this without him? You should always travel with him together as a couple. Isn't that?
It's like you can't have friends. Like
literally, like it was it's so like this weird,
toxic thinking that your partner has to be your whole world, and you cannot have relationships outside of it because they need to fulfill all of your needs, which is
yeah,
you know, impossible and ridiculous. And you talk about this. You talk about prioritizing your yeah. platonic friendships, platonic partners. How are you doing this? How are you, you know, still putting them in front? You're still engaging with your friends. You're still building these friendships.
Yeah. I don't want to ever think that my romantic relationship is the most important thing in my life. We are bound legally. I don't have a legal document with anybody else. We do jointly file taxes. It's possible that we might form an embryo in the future. There might become a person. I don't know. These are things that you could do with your platonic friends or your like friendships or whatever. But I really, something that I've started to crave a lot is like friendships and really thinking about how it's often my default, or if you're in a relationship, your default is like, I'm going to stay home mm-hmm. or I have to spend the weekend with my spouse or I have to do this.
And yeah, like you owe them all of your free time.
It's so it's what weird. We're taught.
Yeah, yeah. I love talking about prioritizing friendships on the podcast because I think
yeah.
we don't really think about it often, and it's so important.
It is so important. Like now I used to... So that thinking is still within me a little bit, like mm-hmm. especially as an Indian with a mom who's a little like, you know, still trying to like cultivate values of like homeliness and like you are the housewife. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But you have to be a feminist too. And it's like, well, I'm just not sure that those two, not that I can't be a feminist and a housewife, but the kind of housewife they want me to be is someone that upholds the patriarchy, that like sits in her place, which is impossible for me to follow.
No, yeah. You're opinionated. I love it. I'm so opinionated.
I mean, they should have known that. But it's interesting because I often feel like that default is like even this weekend, I'm making plans. And my first thought, Alexa, was, am I spending too much time away from my husband? Am I spending enough time with him? And then I was like, no, Friday night is our designated date night. So like, we are going to catch up every night. We have dinner together. And so like, I can have dinner with my girlfriends. Like, I can go and do things by myself. And so it's definitely a lot of like rewriting that script within myself and like making plans to go see my girlfriends. Making plans to like go to new events and meet people. That's why I like have become a yes person. Like, if you ask me something right now in this part of my life, I'll say yes.
Yeah, it's like, Dr. V, be on the podcast. Yep.
Yep.
I'm there.
I'm literally there. Yeah. You tell me where to come. I'm going to show up. I'm here.
But it's great because you, even if that is still within you, because I still have some beliefs that are, you know, deep in me, but yeah. I challenge them. I'm like, okay, why am I thinking this? And then, you know, you're still making decisions based on that, you're, you know, analyzing it.
Yeah.
So it's good.
I talk about that a lot in therapy, that I'm definitely, I overthink a lot, so.
Okay, it's good and bad at the same time. In this case, it's good.
Yeah.
Your brand is a lot about being bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
But not only being bisexual, is being comfortable.
Yeah.
Coming out as bisexual when you're in a monogamous relationship.
Yeah.
So like, you have a husband and you were like, honestly, I am bi.
Yeah.
And you talk about it all the time and how you, your journey with becoming comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, like, and bi enough, even though you are married to a man.
Yeah.
So how could, because a lot of people are in monogamous relationships and they're like, wait, I am bi. Does that mean I have to go out and explore to call myself bi? Or like, do we have to break up? Or how can I be affirmed in my identity, you know, in a monogamous relationship? So tell me a bit about it.
I think I focus definitely on the bisexual part, but I think the bisexual part is just an entryway, right? Because I think maybe you've realized this as well in your work, that a lot of people aren't given the tools to accurately, not even accurately, just to kind of explore their sexuality in a safe way, right? And sexuality can manifest in so many different ways. Like, we often think it's through sex, which is very valid. Like, you can confirm or deny what your interests are when you put theory into practice. But in a lot of cases, it can be through art, it can be through clothing, it can be through like community. It's just so many different things, but a lot of us weren't given those spaces. And then you, when you leave your adolescence and you go into this phase, which is almost like, I find something so troubling about the idea of marriage, which now I talked to my husband and I was like, you know, if it weren't for like the whole green card thing and everything that we needed to do, I don't think that we would have ever gotten married on paper. Because to me, it almost seems like such an oppressive ideology that a lot of people think that their life completely changes after they get married.
And it shouldn't. It's just a piece of paper.
Literally. Like, okay, so you want to like declare your love, you want to sign that piece of paper. But it's almost as if you're entering this new world with all of these like made up rules that...
Unless you didn't live together before, which you should.
Yeah.
You should live together before you get married, please. Yeah. Nothing should change besides like your tax status or something.
No, literally. Actually, yes, you are legally bound to the government. You can't like engage in polygamy and you can't evade your taxes. But it is, so all of these things that I was hearing about being married is like, and I think it really comes with those tenets of compulsory monogamy or toxic heteronormativity, right? Where again, you are everything to your spouse, exploring yourself and, you know, continuing to enrich your life in whatever sexual or non-sexual ways is bad, that's deviant. You're cheating on your spouse. And there are all of these like flagrant ideologies out there, which I just like disagree with. And so I use my bisexuality, and especially as someone who was a latecomer, right? Because I did not even know what these words were. A lot of people don't even know what sex was, how to have sex, whether they're interested in having sex with different types of people and genders. And then you kind of discover it when you're in a safe space. And for many people, that might be a marriage or otherwise. And I use my bisexuality kind of as like a window into that world to talk about the issues that, hey, you're kind of the same person as you were before.
Yeah.
Your partner does not define who you are. And it's just like that one-dimensional thinking that I'm trying to break. And so, yeah, a lot of my content is definitely like more bisexual forward, for the single reason that the bisexual plus umbrella just is so amazing and so diverse, and everyone should just continue. Like, even if you're 80, like, think about it. Like, what are your pronouns? Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of clothes do you like to wear? Who do you want to fuck? Like, mm-hmm. think about those things, because you should.
Challenge your beliefs, people. Okay, so your advice for people that are in a monogamous relationship and realize that they are bi is to find other spaces.
Yeah.
Besides sex, to explore that. So art, community, have queer friends. Even if you're not queer, have queer friends.
Yeah.
And kinky friends. Yeah. They're not they could be the same, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, just open your horizons.
Like, what is your expression, right? Like, mm-hmm. and it also should depend solely on who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the way that you would explore your sexuality would be very different from the way that I explore mm-hmm. my sexuality. Like, I'm pretty, like, socially anxious and a little, like, introverted sometimes. And so for me, like, having a one-on-one conversation with someone who's queer and just talking about queerness mm-hmm. is so affirming. For someone else, and the people that I've interviewed for Allure are like, I opened my marriage because I needed to have sex mm-hmm. and I wanted to have sex. And that was something that we were okay with, that like swinging lifestyle or, you know, whatever, going to a sex party. Mm-hmm. And so it really is, affirm and relate your sexuality to your personality. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to explore. Yeah.
For me, sex is very important, but you yeah. are like a fashion person. So
yeah.
you use fashion a lot to express yourself.
Yeah.
I am not a fashion person. I'm a hoodie person. How dare you
say that? Your hoodie is
I'm a street, very cute. Street fashion.
I love know? That. Yes.
Thank you. But no, yeah, sex for me is very important, which is why I love non-monogamy. You know, I can yeah. I have the freedom to explore all of this.
Exactly. And that's still so valid. And not one of the people I had also interviewed for the threesome article at Allure, one of them had very much said, like, I came out as bisexual. I needed to open my marriage. I wanted to. And that was something that their spouse was okay with. So, like, yeah, just determine what's important to you.
Yeah. Okay. And you also talk a lot about people think they need to start dating, you know, the same gender or a different gender to prove their
yeah
orientation or identity. But dating should be about finding out what you like and dislike in people, not about affirming who you are.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Nail on the head. I don't even need to, like, I don't even need to add anything.
You're like,
to
yes, that. That's yes. what I said.
Yes. What Alexa said. It's so true, though, because
you just said your partner doesn't define who you are.
They don't yeah. at all.
So, and like, just because if you're a girl and you want to date another girl or woman, and if you do, that doesn't mean, yes, you're a lesbian or bi, you know? It's did you like her? Did you,
yeah.
did you have fun? Like, you know, what did you, didn't, what are you looking for? But,
yeah.
like, you could have called yourself that label before, or even, and if you didn't like it, you can still call yourself whatever, you know?
Exactly.
So
labels are literally just labels. And this is what I tell people all the time, because I often get questions in my DMs that are like, da 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 da, am I bi? Da 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 da, am I bi? Do you think I'm bi? And it's like, it's not a diagnosis. It's not a diagnosis.
Yeah.
Like, I have not created a chart or like a criteria.
A checklist.
Yeah, or a checklist to tell you. Like, you make that determination for yourself. But the reason that so many people struggle to do that is because they think that in order to be bisexual, they have to A, date everybody mm-hmm. on the spectrum. B, they have to be single. And I don't know what C is, but, you know, everything yeah. else to do with, you have to be confused, or you're just like kind of like trying to have sex with everyone at mm-hmm. the same time. And I was like, none of those things are true. Like, you can be bisexual if you had zero yeah. sex.
Also, because bisexuality means, it's so broad that it means it's something so different broad. For everyone. So yeah. if your label is constricting you, then don't use that label. Or,
at
you
all.
Know, only if it's affirming and like expansive and makes you feel part of a community, then yeah,
correct.
For sure. I love bisexual because I love the bisexual community.
Yeah.
So, and I feel so comfortable in that label.
They're so cute.
I love us.
I love bi people.
I love us. But if you're like, okay, actually, you know, I don't like bi, I like pan, or you know what, I don't know yet. And it's perfectly fine if you don't know. Just, you know, keep exploring, keep getting to know yourself.
Yeah, and I think, like, even the label straight, I think is...
First of all, I hate the word straight. Like, what do you mean? So we're, like, bent? We're, like,
yeah, we're
crooked?
Bent.
Like, we are, I mean, crooked. I am kind of crooked, but, like, what do you mean you're straight? Like, what does that even mean?
I was joking about this with someone and I said, never, as your default should never be to assume that someone is straight. It should be to assume that everyone is queer and sexually expansive.
Yeah.
Because then you kind of break those ideals within yourself and are able to tell yourself as well that like you are sexually expansive as a being. And honestly, labels don't entirely capture who we are as people.
I love assuming people are not straight, and when they are, I do get disappointed though. I'm like, oh,
okay. I wouldn't have been able to tell at all.
I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. Fine. Okay. It's still such a thing to not feel bi enough. Even if I'm dating more men than women, for example, I am like, oh my God, like, am I bi enough? And I am out there doing all the things.
Yeah.
And I cannot even imagine. Well, I can, but like, it must be even harder when you don't have that freedom, that liberty to be like, I'm so bi. Like, that takes so much inner work because everyone around you is telling you that you're not enough. So how can we get better at this? How can we feel enough?
What I really enjoy when I study about like public health and equity is understanding that there are many factors of influence. And so, yes, you can make individual choices, but there are a lot of environmental and interpersonal, intrapersonal, and systemic factors that are making it harder for you to come out as bisexual and accept yourself. So firstly, be kind on yourself. Like, you can really tell yourself, like, why am I not coming out as bi and living my best life? It's because the systems around you have not set you up for success. Like, a lot of people fear for their, like, safety. A lot of people have, you know, been in situations where, like, bi women have higher rates they suffer from higher rates of domestic violence and sexual assault.
Depression, anxiety too.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and a lot of that comes from coming out to their partner and facing that, you know, intimate partner violence. And so it isn't always like conducive or easy for someone to say that. For most times, it's just like, yeah, I like this. Admitting it to themselves, which honestly should be enough. And there has been a lot of stigma in the past. Like, I think I saw some discourse on Twitter at some point that said, it was incredibly transphobic, but they said we should cut the T from LGB. And then someone was like, let's just cut the B too, because like, they don't know what they're doing. And we only want like monosexual queers who know exactly who they are on the spectrum. And I think that is so upsetting and invalidating to
it's fucked up. Like, within the queer community, bisexuals are like oppressed, and you're like, we're on the same side, like, literally. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, and there's just so many terms that come up, right? Like, you have bi erasure, you have biphobia, but then you also have like this false idea of bisexual privilege, which is just
the hetero privilege that you could choose to be heterosexual.
Exactly. So the heterosexual privilege thing, like, that's another debate. But the bisexual privilege is what you said, is the idea that you can kind of like flip on a dime.
You can just choose.
Yeah, you can just choose and be like, I'm straight today. I guess I'm gay today. And it's like, no, I'm not gay or straight. I'm bisexual. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay, but how can we be more compassionate when we are not feeling enough? Because it is a lot about like being kind to yourself.
It is definitely about being kind to yourself and also finding activities that affirm you. And I really do think that if you are a person that needs a lot of external validation, having a group of people around you who affirm everything about your bisexuality is so important. And you can tell. You don't need to give them kind of like a memo or anything. Like, they
are... Affirm me once a day.
But even if you want to say that, I mean...
If you need it, you can ask for it.
You should ask for it, right? And the people that love you and accept you will do that. Like, I have friends like that text me. But I was in a bar once and it was early January 2023. And it was a gay bar in Williamsburg, and I was talking to someone, and I was like, yeah, I'm bisexual. And they said, no, you're not bisexual, you're gay. And so they kept saying it over and over again. And my friend really stopped and was like, stop it. They're bisexual. Mm. Right. And so it was so affirming for me to hear that someone is sticking up for me. And that person just like immediately quieted down. And it was just like, for me, it was just amazing. I think that's why like community is so important.
Queer friends, I'm telling you.
They really, my queer friends changed my life. Like I went to my first Pride as a closeted person. But then as I was talking to my queer friends, you know, going with them to gay bars, like tagging along with them, you kind of really build that confidence. And I think that's why I found such immense success and also like just a sense of like belonging with the bisexual support groups that I host. Like I'm literally hosting one on Sunday. It's so, I'll tell you, the setup is so easy. Like all I do is I email people, I like last Sunday of the month, show up for an hour at 11 a.m.
Oh, it's in person?
No, it's online. Okay. Because we have people from all around the world.
Right, so Dr. V hosts free bisexual support groups for anyone that doesn't feel bi enough, it's curious, it's exploring, needs reassurance.
Yeah.
I've yet to attend, but it sounds like an amazing support group. Like, great community.
I mean, and it's like anyone who is bi plus, and we make it very strict where like bisexual people do have their own certain set of problems that they want to talk about in a situation where they're not needing to educate other allies or having to talk about how their bisexualness like relates to being gay or lesbian. And those are very unique experiences. And it's just about being seen, honestly.
Yeah. And even that, just that makes a world of a difference.
There was a study that I had like also cited on my page where bisexual women are less likely to have a community or like affirming community. And so there is such a lack of bisexual spaces. They are really hard for people to get into, or to be really honest, a lot of them are white, right? Like, and so like I find such a sense of pride in this group because we have everyone from like India to the US to the UK, Scotland, someone like signed in from Egypt. And so this, I really think that like being able to affirm how our bisexualness like shows up in our lives, not just as like queer people, but also as brown people, right? And like living in these cultures where you don't have space at all to like affirm yourself. Yeah. It can be, I mean, if you're able to ask for help and seek that out, that's really the biggest thing.
And people always ask me, like, I live in a small town. You talk about building a community. How can I build one? And I'm like, start online.
Yeah.
That's how I started.
Yeah.
And I literally have to come to New York. I am privileged and I can do so, but I have to come to New York to see my people.
Yeah.
Because like back home, I have online and online keeps me alive when I'm there, you know?
Yeah.
So do what you can. And there are spaces, you just have to find them, but we do need more for sure.
No, I agree with you. Like that online, I mean, we have the gift of the internet.
It's 2024. Like,
like
everything's just online.
Everything is online. Like find it out. Just do your own research, I guess. But for the most part, hopefully things should show up. A lot of people actually use Instagram. So I would say like, if you're starting out, I think Instagram is great. A lot of, even if you type out bisexual in the search bar.
Yeah. Just like, consuming content, queer content, it affirms you.
And those creators like myself are like hosting groups like this. Mm-hmm. Even if you're like, I don't want to go to whatever like meetup pages and you're not able to vet who is doing it, going through the source, I think is a good way.
Yeah, that is good. I want to ask you, because you cited a study that a lot of bi people live in silence and they think that's better than coming out because, you know, they live in their bi privilege. But it was proven that there are some benefits to coming out as well.
Yes.
So what kind of benefits are we talking about?
I mean, there's just like improved quality of life, right? I mean, it's a lot of people who are in the closet have several health issues. So you have like joint pain, muscle pain, fatigue, depression, anxiety. Chronic pain was apparently higher in people who are closeted and bisexuals who are closeted. And so really, you know, even if it's to yourself,
just accepting it.
Yes. And
because sometimes you're not safe to come out. Or
you're not at all. Yeah. Or you're like in a relationship and you're not really sure. But even if you're like, okay, I have to tell someone, like finding one person. Like I told my brother in the beginning, that's it. Like I told my brother and I felt so good.
He was so supportive. I read, I saw one of your reels and he's like, that was so brave of you. And he was so nice.
I mean, but that's the thing, right? Like at that point, I was like refusing to accept it. But then like telling someone and even just them saying, that's really good for you.
But that the way he reacted was probably, you know, a tipping point for you. Because if he had been shitty about it, that would have made a whole difference. So like you have to be careful, you know, who you tell and how, because that first encounter, you know, it can change everything.
It does.
So That is something we have to keep in mind for sure.
I feel like I'm a case study in like coming out because honestly, Alexa, like I look at pictures of myself from like when I was definitely closeted, when I was like making out with girls and I was like very confused about who I was. I had like disordered eating. Like I think at that time I would definitely been diagnosed with an eating disorder. I was depressed. I was definitely like dabbling in a lot of substances. You know, there was definitely some substance use disorder happening at that point. And then around, I think like 27 was really where I could tell the difference. Like if you look at pictures of me now versus then, you're like, she has gotten new life. Like it's almost as if the confidence,
the spark,
it has, yeah. You know, like I'm not saying that depression has completely like gone off or like, but it almost feels like I know myself. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if you're
comfortable in your skin, you accept it. Yeah.
Literally, quite literally. So if you are able, and it all started with me kind of admitting it to myself. Yeah. Because I remember that because I was like walking around DC calling my friend and being like, I'm bi. I think I'm bi. It's happening. Like, it's like I'm literally breaking out of the egg and I'm like being reborn right now. Mm-hmm. But I could really tell like up until that point, I was just like not happy at all.
For late bloomers too, it's like,
yes,
you question everything because I'm also a late bloomer and I'm like you because you have liked men your whole life and you,
yes,
and you start questioning, you're like, but I don't really like men, and then you're like, am I really, or do I just love making out with my friends, you know? Like that, as if that was so straight of me, you know, loving making out with my friends. I would always want to go out with the friends that I would make out with so that we could make out, like.
That's such a telltale sign. Like, if you really like making out, you're gay. I'm sorry.
I know. But I thought it was so straight of me, you know? That's how Delulu, in the bad way, that's how Delulu people, bi people are. Like, yeah. It's so hard. And you're, like, in your mid-20s, and you're like, could I really like women? And then you feel like,
yeah,
like you're a teenager all over again because it's, like, a newfound thing, and you're a guinea, and you don't know how to talk to women and all the things. So, I mean, it's magic and it's beautiful, but it's also terrifying.
It's incredibly terrifying because you're like, am I doing this for attention? Am I like lying to myself? Am I just like, what's wrong with me? I'm like,
and
trying
there's
to, like,
no checklist. There's no way to fucking know. But for sure, if you love making out with your friends,
yeah,
you're probably a little gay.
I don't want to use this time to like, I was going to make a reel about it, but I think this is a good kind
you
of segue.
Can still make it into time.
Yeah. But so, I think people get confused with the difference between finding someone attractive and being attracted to someone.
For sure. That's also a thing because I always admired women. I'm like, you're perfect. I love you. Goddess. You're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. But I didn't know that was also attraction.
You wanted to have sex with them or you wanted to date them,
right?
Or you,
I didn't
wanted
know
to be with them
because also I would compare the way men are typically attracted to women and I was like, I don't feel that, you know, I don't feel that like primal raw need that most men have. It's more of a worship kind of vibe, and
ooh,
like that's how I express my sexuality with women. I'm like princess treatment for all my girls, like,
yeah,
you are my world and I will take care of you,
yeah,
you know. And with men I'm like, what the fuck do you want, you know?
So why are you here?
Are you, what do you want, you know? But that's why I didn't know it was actually bisexuality. Because I thought it was so straight, so common to adore women and not be attracted to them, but I so was.
Yeah, I mean, that's up to you to tell, right? To make that decision, whether you're attracted to them or not. It's a really hard one. I get a lot of DMs that are like, I think that there are some actresses that are like really beautiful.
Or
I
watch lesbian porn, am I bi? And it's like, no, not necessarily. It depends. You want to act on it, you know? Because like, so many straight women watch lesbian porn. The highest viewage in lesbian porn is straight women. So like, no, you're not bi just because you watch lesbian porn, but maybe like keep exploring, you know.
And I feel like with the lesbian porn as well, it isn't so much like, maybe there's like some tenderness to that you're also craving as someone, right? Like,
and you also want that done to you too, maybe.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's more hot. The oral sex that you're like envisioning happening,
right?
Because
it's not regular heterosexual porn, that's just penetration, you know. So
exactly,
it can be a number of things, but yeah, it's hard to figure it out and be like, which one is it?
Yeah, that's some deep introspection you need to do.
For sure. Let's compare sex in your 20s versus sex in your 30s. because a lot of people think, you know, you peak in your 20s, you have to do everything in your 20s, and then like everything goes downhill and you're like a grandpa and, you know, you just die or something. But 30s and 40s are the new 20s. So tell me, let's compare whatever you're comfortable with, your sex in your 20s versus your 30s. Like body wise, orgasms wise, confidence wise, everything.
It's so
performance wise. You know?
Are you a millennial?
I'm in the middle. I'm 97. It depends on the author that you quote. I grew up with millennials, though.
You did?
Yeah.
And did you?
But I have some Gen Z traits.
Did you ever watch Sex and the City?
Yes.
Okay.
But the movies.
The movies?
Barely any episodes.
Well, I guess the movies are kind of like maybe like a somewhat of a...
Yeah, you get the vibe.
But there was some problematic elements on Sex and the City, but I really enjoy that show for the singular reason is that they really do show that women above a certain age enjoy sex. And I really love Samantha's character so much because, you know, she's going through HRT when she's going through menopause, but then she wants to fuck. Like, she's horny as ever. She's dating. She's having a great time. And I still find it surprising that despite having such amazing, like, representation in that sense in the media and also, like, looking at a lot of women who are also leading amazing lives, sexual lives, is the idea that we think that our sexuality diminishes A, at a certain age, and B, after we get married.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're just like a starfish and you're not
really...
You have
to do everything before you get married, and then you can get married and, like...
That's it.
You're going to be boring, or your sex life is going to be the same all the
time. You can't be kinky if you're married. Like, have you heard of swingers? Swingers have the most fucking fun. And
we talk about that all the time.
Yeah, they're like in their 40s. They're fucking vibing. I know for a fact, like 50s and 60s, they're like... And for the Allure column, I really think it's changed my perspective as well, as like really interviewing people who are like 60s, late 60s, saying like, I love masturbating. I have sex toys.
Yeah. Well, I gave my 85-year-old grandma a sex toy, and we talk about sex all the time. And like, she uses it, you know, like, and I used to think, because that's what they teach us, like sex, after you're 50, you know, that's gross. You don't want to even imagine your parents having sex. But like, and now I think about myself and like, when I'm 50, I'm having mind-blowing sex until like, I fucking drop
we
dead.
We better be. Yeah. We better be. Sorry.
Yeah, no, and we will. And studies show that women, their most satisfying sex years are in their 50s, actually, or late 40s. And like, so no, sex doesn't end when you're, you know, 29 and a half. But I wanna talk about your experience. Like, what changes have you noticed?
Oh my God, so many changes. I'm like looking back at the sex that I used to have in my 20s. Like, granted, in my 30s, I've only had sex with like one person. But in my 20s, you know, when I was definitely like very sexually active, I found that in a lot of cases, I never advocated for myself. Like, they would finish.
Were you just performing?
Literally. Basically? Like, it was the orgasms that are like literally not even orgasms. They were just like moans, like performative moans. You know what I'm talking about? And like... just penetration, like no focus on oral sex. Once they came, sex it was done. I've been in like really upsetting situations where the guy was like in the middle of sex, I'd be like, oh, I'm not feeling this anymore. They'd be like, can you at least finish me off? Like, I started and like, I have blue balls.
And you're like, where's my pleasure? Like, where's my orgasm?
Yeah, like literally just laying there like a pillow and he's like fucking like an inanimate object. Like, is that attractive to a lot of you? Like, and I feel, I'm really hoping, I feel like this is why I talk about it. It's like, if you're in your 20s, like, you are going to stumble a lot. A lot of the sex you're going to have is bad, but that's maybe a good thing because then you're realizing, I fucking hate that shit.
You know what you don't like.
You know what you don't like. It's not going to be amazing right off the bat at all. Like, you're going to like be completely confused by sex. I think that's when a lot of people discover what kinks they're into, you know, what kind of like fetishes they're into, you know, whether they're into any type of like role play. So I think 20s is usually experimental. It was for me. And I definitely think in my 30s, I was like, if I'm not having, not just an orgasm, like if I'm not feeling...
Pleasure in general, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm not feeling comfortable in my body right now, which I think is the most important. Because like, I have the courage now, even with my husband, if we're having sex, to be like, I'm not feeling this.
Let's just stop.
Let's stop and go to bed. This is...
It's hard because a lot of the times you're like, I'll just suck it up for a few minutes so that they can come.
Yeah.
But like, if you're not having fun, you can fucking stop. And that is fine. And they have to respect it. It is... whenever you say no, it's fucking over. You know?
It's over.
So that's very important. And while I do think you experiment a lot in your 20s, I always say to never stop exploring. That is one of the times that I use the word never, because even if you're doing the same act, you can do them in an infinite amount of ways. Correct. Endless. So never stop exploring. A lot of people are like, yeah, but sex just gets boring. You do it, you know, the routine. No, there's so much to do.
There's so much to,
And if you start doing new things, there you'll learn about other things and doing it in another way and all everything. So don't stop exploring. And then you become more confident. You advocate for yourself. You know what to ask for.
All of that, yeah.
And I just think sex just should get always better. And you also stop giving a fuck. Not that I'm 30, but you stop giving a fuck about what people think. And to, if you ask for what you want and people say no, you're like, okay, next person. Like, someone else is going to give it to me. I'm not going to waste my time convincing someone to give me what I want. Like, go goodbye. You come over, you know.
Yeah, and masturbation too. I think like continue to masturbate because that only improves body image, dental self-image, confidence.
Regardless of your relationship status, masturbate.
Regardless, and your age as well. It's just so, I really wish for people that they are able to play with themselves. That at any age, you are allowed to play with yourself. You are allowed to like find pleasure in your own body.
It's your home. It's the only one you're getting in this life.
That's so
enjoy
true.
It, love it.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love that. That's, that's very nice.
Okay, and you speak about, and we just talked about it, but I want to talk about more. Coming.
Yeah.
And still thinking sex was amazing. Because for me, coming is not my main goal necessarily. I can have the best time, amazing sex, and not come. Well, if I want an orgasm, I should get one. Because whoever wants one should get one.
Yeah.
But if I don't want one, if I'm fine or I can't because I'm in my head or whatever, I can still have mind-blowing sex. And I want to normalize that because, yeah, I love orgasms. They're great, you know, for everyone.
Yeah.
But they're not necessary for me to have really good sex.
Orgasms are pretty overrated, if I can be honest with you. You shouldn't focus so much on the destination. And what ends up happening is that we get so impatient and in our head and we're like, I have to reach the tip of that mountain and then that's kind of the marker of good sex. But it's like, okay, what if I completely remove the idea of an orgasm? What does sex look like for you then?
Yes, but when you do that, you still have to, because there's extremes, right? You can be like, oh, yeah. I don't have to come, and then no one cares about your pleasure and you're, you know, because everything should be pleasurable.
Oh, yeah, so, 100%.
Yeah, like still advocate for your pleasure. Have the most amount of fun. But like if you don't come, it's not the end of the world.
It's not. It's really not.
Because some people have so much fun and they're like, yeah, but I didn't come. And I'm like, okay, so what? Like you had so much fun.
You
can then get yourself off or whatever. Or you didn't come. You know, it's fine.
I mean, whatever you're engaging in at that point, right? Maybe you're watching porn together. Maybe you're like playing around with toys. Maybe it's just like penetrative sex. Whatever it is. The reason I say is if you take out an orgasm outside of like sex and you're just having sex, it really allows you again, like what you mentioned, is like to advocate for other things that you want. Mm-hmm. Because maybe in our minds, we are only taught that orgasms are it. Like I have to learn how to have an orgasm and that's sex. And it's like, well, what if I remove that? And then what would it look like to you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would you use this time to like actually explore what you like that isn't going to get you an orgasm? That's just going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think play is just such an amazing term because I really do think like
playing.
Yeah, just getting rid of that like stress. Because for me also, I'm just like, I don't want to orgasm every time I have sex. I don't know if that's like a lot of people think that's weird, but I'm like, I don't really find a need to do that because I just want to connect with the person. I want to have deep conversations, which is something that I'm really like, I think I'm maybe a little demi because that was how I discovered it. Like to say, like, if I take out the orgasm factor out of it, I'm realizing that a deep emotional conversation, like intimate touches and cuddling and lying next together, it's just so amazing.
That's so interesting. For me, it's more about fun. Sex has to be fun.
Yeah.
So if I'm in the middle of anything, I should be like, oh my God, this is so fun.
Yeah.
Instead of like, it can also be playful, which is fun, but like it can be kinky, it can be aggressive, it can be all sorts of things, but it has to be fun for me. For you, it has to be deep and connected.
It has to be deep,
So, you know, so find out what's most important for you. And if it is orgasms, then that, you know, that's fine. That's your top priority. But I want it to be, I don't want you to feel bad just because you didn't come, you know?
Exactly.
Feel bad if they didn't give a fuck about your pleasure.
Yes.
But don't feel bad if you had so much fun and you didn't come.
Yeah. And also, if you're finding that you chronically are struggling to have an orgasm, then that's something that you might need to evaluate with your doctor.
No,
we're
talking about, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Of course, yeah.
Okay, let's finish off with a would you rather.
Oh, okay.
So, would you rather give someone the best sex of their lives, like give someone that experience,
okay,
or be given that experience by someone?
Give it to someone.
Why?
Because I think that I've had the privileges and the resources to explore what good sex looks like, right? And I feel like I have the tools to make it happen at any point that I want to. But I don't think that's a reality for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But like you said, like a lot of people are at war with their bodies. They haven't connected with themselves. They haven't really been given the tools to understand what it is they like, what it is that they don't like, because they're spending so much time in shame and guilt, because mm-hmm. society tells them that that's what they should feel. So if I can give all of you some really good sex, please have it, because that really make you feel confident and like really, really, really love yourself. Mm-hmm.
A giver. We have a giver here.
I'm
also such a giver. It's hard for me to receive, actually. Like,
oh my God, me too.
Yeah. Have you gotten more comfortable with it, like with time, or?
No, it's really hard for me to like have someone like prioritize just, like,
chill
me.
And receive.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
It's really hard. I'm like, okay, wrap it up.
I'm like, thank you so much. After,
yeah,
like,
thank
10
you.
Seconds.
Like, can we like flip the script?
Yeah. For oral, for example, the other person has to be obsessed with giving me oral that they want it more than me. And I'm like, okay, now if I know that you love it, then I'm like, okay, fine. Because you're enjoying it as much as I am. But if someone's just like down there, just like, because I'm like, no, this is something else. Like,
exactly. Oh my God, your want to give should be more than my want to
receive. Same. Yeah. You have to be obsessed with it. If not, I can't. And like when I go down on people, I try to be just as eager, you know, because you don't want someone to just like do the thing. You want them to enjoy being there. So I don't know.
This is controversial. I'm actually not that into foreplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I go straight to the deed. I actually put more emphasis on the intimate part, which is something that I've realized. It's just like a lot of people aren't used to that idea of just talking and holding. Maybe demisexuals are. Maybe I'm like really demisexual, guys. I'm coming out on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I really think that's true because.
Yeah, it sounds like.
It doesn't it?
And it's also a spectrum. You know, you have to find out where you are on the spectrum.
It's so like I cannot be impulsive or spontaneous. Like I really have to feel that connection with a person. Mm-hmm. And the deeper we are and the more intellectually stimulating conversations.
Maybe Sapio.
I might be a Sapio too. Oh my God. Yeah, the more I learn about myself, see?
Never stop exploring.
Never stop it.
Okay, wait. Last thing. You talked about being comfortable in your body and that you're more comfortable now than ever before. And I saw it on your page too. Because we talk a lot about body hair and, you know, they're having a moment. But you were talking about facial hair. And I feel like no one fucking talks about that. So how have you become more comfortable with your facial hair?
I just don't give a fuck, honestly. I had PCOS and through like medication and a bunch of like lifestyle behaviors, it somehow managed to disappear. But I was on spironolactone. I was like taking a lot of medication for it. And again, I think as an Indian, you're just subject to so much of like ridicule and like racist comments that, you know, we're hairy and we're sweaty and we're smelly. And like one part of it is just like, I'm just going to fucking own it. Like, I don't know. Like if I'm not feeling ashamed by whatever it is that you're saying, then it has no power or value.
Correct.
And I'm also just not going to spend a lot of time or effort trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you want to do it, and like when I was young, I was definitely like shaving my mustache. And yeah, if I had a daughter or whoever, a child who wanted to do it, I'd be like, yeah, sure. That's, you know, that's your choice that you're doing with your body. Mm-hmm. I've just gotten to a point where I'm like, yeah, I have sideburns. Yeah, I have hair on my face. Yeah, I have a mustache. What else is new?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that what you want to talk about?
It's just acceptance, right? Like, if you own it, nothing anyone says matters.
Like, it's so also, I think that hair also is just such a bigger topic to talk about, like, infantilizing women and the idea of, like, perfection. And I just reject that so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I do want to do laser hair removal because my hair is so thick that it causes acne.
Mm-hmm. And like ingrowns?
Yeah, exactly. And they're painful. So I'm like, okay, maybe I need to consider it. Mm-hmm. But if they didn't and it was fine, I would just be like, but I've gotten to that point.
Yeah. Right?
And I feel like, but it's still a sense of insecurity for a lot of people because the beauty standards are a woman who is hairless.
Bare, just completely bare.
Zero
And who
hair.
Else is bare naturally? children. So
weird. Is that like, tell me that's not like,
I have such a weird relationship with it. If someone is only like, I only like bare women, and like, I'm disgusted by hair, I'm like, get the fuck away from me.
That's a danger. Oh my god, yeah. Red flag.
Yeah, I'm like, no. It's just hard because like, I remove my body hair. Patriarchy won that battle. I like smooth. I like how it feels, etc.
It is really nice though to shave. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I like it, and I understand if I think it's my preference, but I would never tell someone else what to do with their body hair. So like, that's where I draw the line.
I think there was an episode in How I Met Your Mother where Robin has a date and she anticipates having sex with a person. And then she's like in the restaurant bathroom, you know, she pays the waitress to go buy a razor. Uh-huh. And then she like uses a bunch of like wax strips. And then she's in there for so long that her date leaves. And then it's like, and then she's like disheveled. Like she like lost, I don't know. She like something happened to her. And I'm like, girl, if that person is not going to have sex with you because you don't have shaved legs.
We have like 1 millimeter of hair leg.
Yeah. Like what are you?
Leg hair.
That's not the person that you should be having sex with. That's really gross.
I think that's where, that's how you know. If you're usually shaved and you don't shave for a few days, how they react, like that'll tell you a lot of things that you have to know. Exactly. Like if they're disgusted by a little bit, it's not like we all, it's just so natural. This is another episode. Like I'm just going to stop.
There are some amazing body hair activists that I can put you on to.
Yeah, yeah.
Who like literally have like, they do activism through their body. They have like a lot of chest hair and they have like a lot of underarm hair. So
yeah, I actually do want to have an episode about this. Okay, so who do you think I should have on the podcast? Venus cuffs?
You should definitely have Venus cuffs.
Okay, anyone else?
Top of mind? No one that I can think of right now except Venus, but maybe I can think about someone.
Yeah, just DM me.
Yeah, okay. Definitely DM me. I'll be like, this person needs to be in bed with you.
Dr. V, thank you so much. Are you ready to turn off the lights?
Yes, let's do it.